we are on our last lesson of prayer. So, we're not going to talk about prayer yet. So, it's kind of a turn right to go left situation, right? You know, so what I'm going to read is I'm going to read a verse from 1 Samuel 20, verse 41. And this is completely out of the context of prayer, so don't think about it. Just react with me to this passage. So, 1 Samuel 20, it's, you know, you got to understand in this passage. So, David and Jonathan, you know David and Jonathan, right? David, King David. He had a buddy named Jonathan. I don't know, he's less well known. But at one point in time, they're basically, Jonathan's dad wanted to kill David. And so, it's kind of an emotional situation. Basically, the situation that we're coming into is, you know, David basically finding out, yes, Saul wants to kill me, so I have to leave my best friend. I have to go, like, off and run for my life, essentially. And so him and his best friend were really sad about this situation. And so let me read to you just this one verse and just react to it for me, okay, right? 1 Samuel 20, verse 41. Don't need to flip there. And as soon as the lad was gone, David arose out of a place towards the south and fell on his face to the ground. He's pretty bummed, right? Pretty sad. Fell on his face to the ground and bowed himself three times, and they kissed one another and wept with one another until David exceeded. Right? Okay, so basically you see these two bros like crying and kissing in a field after they realize that, you know, the tragic situation that's going on. What is the, Bryson, give me your default reaction to that.
What? Did you just say two bros?
Yeah.
Crying and kissing in a
yeah.
field?
That's what it says. That's what it says. It's biblical, right? What, let's be real. What's the honest gut instinct to that these days?
Gay.
Gay. Right? You know, like, right? That's what the... That's kind of what it feels like. And so,
no, I figured that's what you said. I just had to confirm. I was like,
I know, you're reading this and you're just like, dang, okay. They, you know, and now everybody wants to quote out that, now everybody wants to say that they were gay because they, you know, have read the Bible so much and totally know what David's like. But why do I go to that weird passage? Because what we're looking, yes, because I have a point. Astute observation, Marcella. Yes. No, I go to that because we're going to be talking about friendship today. And I think... Commonly, I think, especially nowadays, especially in the rise of homosexuality and all these things, the normal platonic friendship between people is kind of broken, fundamentally, right? Two guys can't be bros too close, otherwise now it's like homo, right? You know, it's, you can't, you know, if you look at, if have any of you guys ever seen pictures back in the day, like if guy friends were just like buddies, have you ever seen what they looked like when they took pictures? They were like, they'd hold hands. Or like, you know, put their arms around each other. Or, right, one, I get it. I'm in the exact same spot as you. But why did guys do that? Because they were like, they were real men. This homosexuality, this kind of perversion of relationships and friendships wasn't around back, you know, a couple hundred years ago. So dudes, you know, if they were close, they were buddies, they'd hold hands, right? You know, and that sounds weird, but like, I don't know. Maybe it's just being close to each other. I don't know. And so I'm kind of getting to the point that there's something today with friendship that's kind of wrong. And so I want to investigate today a little bit of like, okay, well, what does friendship really look like? I think we're in a world that, you know, wants to corrupt friendship, wants to corrupt, you know, and we will get to prayer with this, I promise. But it wants to corrupt friendship. It wants to corrupt the relationships you can have with each other, right? As with everything, you know, God didn't put us on an island alone, right? When we got saved, he didn't say, okay, you, here's your rucksack, go off into Kenya by yourself, wander around. If you see another Christian, go the opposite way, you know, divide and conquer, right? He didn't tell us to do that. He told us to get together every week and hang out with each other. And I think that's because he has a purpose behind friendships and friendship as a whole. And so let's look at God's purpose in friendship. Look at what, you know, what maybe we've lost. You know, I think a lot of times, you know, ask yourself the question, what's friendship for? Why does it exist? Any answers? Someone, Bryson, what does friendship exist?
Well, this may be a stretch. I'm just going to go out there. I'm sorry. I'm really not. I know, like, I really just had it. Oh, okay, I got it. Cool. I had to look at drinking for some reason. I figured out.
Spiritual telepathy,
yeah,
right there.
Yeah, it really was. No, so I know, like, when me and Drake were going, when we first started discipleship and everything, like, we learned about the four goals, and one of them was established with like other believers and everything. And when if you're establishing with like other believers, which there's a verse for that, Proverbs 13:20, which you know, but That's what friendship's for, you know. Hold on, wait. I know this. Never mind. I can't just remember.
Okay, no, but I see what path you're going to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Proverbs 13:20 basically is like, in a way, it's like talking about not
your
friends, but like who to be around and stuff like that.
Totally, yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. No, that's good. You don't need to go any further than that. Well, I'll get another answer. But like, think about your classmates. Like, think about your friends. Why often nowadays, why do people have friends? Anybody got an answer?
To feel fit in.
Yeah, to feel like they fit in, right? What else you got? You had something. Didn't you say something?
Stress relief, I guess.
Yeah, stress relief. Yeah, yep, absolutely. Grayson, I see one on your face. What do you got? To not be lonely. Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah.
To help each other.
To help each other? Okay, that's a good one.
To have someone.
Yeah.
Like, to lean on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So fundamentally, right, I mean, and none of those things are wrong, and I'm not saying those things are bad, but friendship today, do you realize all of those are genuinely serving you, mm-hmm. right? I have friends so that I can feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. I have friends so that I can feel like I fit in. I have friends so that I don't feel lonely anymore. Generally speaking, in the Christian walk, are things given to us just for us to feel better about ourselves? No, they're not. So once again, my point that I'm bringing it back to, I think we have slightly a diminished view of what friendship is in the Bible. And so, you know, God has a purpose for friendship. God has a definition of what a good friend is. And so maybe the reason that our friendship is like devalued these days, maybe the reason that, you know, I think I saw statistics that like 85% of adult men don't have any friends. Right? You know, like, I mean, you guys know this too. No, I mean, you might laugh now, but once you get out of school, mm-hmm. I would have zero friends if it wasn't for church. Zero. None. I would have no friends. And I guarantee you, I mean, all my coworkers, why do your coworkers hang out with each other? Because they don't have any other friends. They don't like each other. They just don't have any other friends. It's depressing and it's sad, but this is the reality of kind of, I mean, just ask any, go find some 25 or 30 year old and ask them how easy is it to make friends at your age, and the answer is what friends? So
Opal is heartbroken these days.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, it is depressing. It is. So we're going to look at this real quick. We're gonna do a quick study. Just a quick little gloss. Not in depth at all. There's lots of verses about friendship in the Bible. We're not gonna do it. So I'm gonna pray us in real quick. Dear Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for all you've given us. Thank you that, Lord, just every aspect of life is in your word. There's nothing that we have to leave to chance, nothing we have to guess at, Lord, but everything that we could ever want to know is just in this book, Lord. And I thank you so much that you've written it down for us. I pray you'd help our hearts be open for what you've got for us. Help us be wise with all the things that you've given us and let us commit them to our minds and actually let them change us and not just catalog them in our brain and, you know, save them for a rainy day. In your name, amen. All right, and I want to clarify, before we get into this, I'm going to look at traits of a good friend. But I want to clarify right off the bat, true friendship for you as a Christian is with other Christians, right? I want to clarify that. Oh, some server's down. I don't know. Not my problem. But, right?
You're clocked out.
Right? So, you as a Christian, and Bryson, this is what the verse you were talking about, right? True friendship is based on the Word of God, and you have relationships with people that also have relationships with God, right?
You can have the verse and look back at it.
Okay, do you want to
share? He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed.
Exactly, yep. And so if you're hanging out with unsaved people, are they wise?
No.
Where does wisdom come from?
God.
The Bible. Can an unsaved person get wisdom from the Bible?
No.
No. 2 Corinthians 2:14. Natural man receiveth not things of the Spirit of God. So, right? Well, they can technically get with them, but, you know, understanding, you know, getting pedantic. But you get what I'm saying, right? If you want to have a good friendship, it has to be based on that. So when I'm saying the things that we're going to talk about today, I don't want you to think about your unsaved friend, right? And strive. I mean, you should still be a good friend to them, but you shouldn't be counting on them being the friend that God wants them to be for you because they can't. They don't have the Holy Spirit in them. Good friendship, right, is hard. Good friendship's difficult. You need the Holy Spirit to be a good friend. So, having said that, I'm going to flip to Proverbs 6, verse 1. We're spending a lot of time in Proverbs today.
As soon as I opened up my Bible, I got to it.
Okay. And like I said, this is just going to be a gloss. We can go deeper, but we're just going to just hit this if you're more interested. I've got more verses I could share with you, but we're just going to... It's not the main point we're hitting today. We're using this as a stepping stone. 6 verse 1. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast stricken thy hand with a stranger, right? This is what Caleb and I do every day, right? Stricken your hand with a stranger, right? You know, made an agreement with a stranger, right? You're agreeing to do something stupid. Thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Okay, you did something stupid. You said something dumb. You're in some kind of bad situation because of you and your dumb mouth running, right? We've all been there. Do this now, verse 3, my son, and deliver thyself. Okay, how do I get delivered? Right? When thou art come into the hand of thy friend, go, humble thyself, and make sure thy friend. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. So this is an interesting passage, and you could unpack this for days doctrinally, and there's a bunch of stuff in here, but I always just thought this was kind of interesting, talking about going into the hand of your friend to deliver yourself. Right? Here's the first thing that a friend can do well for each other. Right? A friend can deliver you. What do I mean by that? You know, have you ever heard the word accountability? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Someone tell me what accountability is.
Holding each other accountable.
Exactly, right. Okay, what does accountable mean?
Holding someone by their actions. Like making them like, oh, you did this, but like now you have to like stand before what you did.
Yeah, okay.
I'm trying to explain.
It's hard to explain without the word. It really is. Anybody else going to take a stab at the definition? Accountability.
Keeping somebody in check.
Yeah, kind of keeping someone in check. That's a simple way of putting it. Exactly. Accountability. So friends... Good biblical friends are a fantastic source of accountability, right? What do I mean by accountability in the Christian aspect, right? A good friend, when you've done something stupid, a good friend, you can go to them and say, dude, I've been an idiot. Like, I'm in a bad situation right now. Like, and they can be like, hey, dude, you need to shape up, right? You know, we've all had friends. Hopefully, you've had a good enough friend to tell you, dude, that was kind of out of line, man, right? And, you know, honestly, I didn't have many. I had a couple guy friends that were that way, where they could tell you, just be like, dude, that was kind of like, look kind of messed up, dude. You know, like, I don't know. You'd be bad to another person or sass another someone or, you know. I remember I'd, like, you know, call my sister stupid, and my friend would be like, dude, you're kind of a jerk to your sister. Oh, my gosh. Right? Get held accountable. Or, you know, one of the few blessings I had growing up is, you know, I didn't have the Bible, but I did have good biblical friends. You know, and what we would often do is, I mean, we'd all know each other's struggles, whatever sins we had in each other's lives. We knew all the sins that all of our brothers had. You know, we could check in with each other, say, hey, dude, how are you doing on this? Like, you said that you haven't read your Bible in 3 weeks. You read your Bible recently? You know, hey, here's this thing that you struggle with. You know, hey, there's this thing you struggle with. Where are you at with that? What's going on? We could hold each other accountable, right? It was this cool setup where, you know, you knew that when you did something stupid, in 3 days, like, your friend was going to ask you about it. So you're just like, maybe I'm not going to do that dumb thing today, right? It helped hold you accountable, because I got to use the definition, right? So what does that look like? What does that look like? Well, you know, here's kind of the first question I have for you. Have you been honest about your struggles with a friend? Right? A lot of people these days, it's not cool to share about the things you struggle with. In the age of, I'm going to post my best self on the internet and make everybody think I'm perfect, right? It's not cool to get up and, you know, tell someone, hey, here's this shortcoming in me as a person. Would you help me maybe try to nip that in the bud, right? This is why I get up here, you know, when I get up here and talk about, you know, my struggles growing up when I was your age. This is why I get up here and openly talk about failing at school, right? You know, dropping out of college with a 0.0 back in the day, right? This is why I openly get up here and talk about crying in McDonald's with a cheeseburger, right? You know, do you think I, like, am super, like, proud of these moments in my life? No, I'm not proud of these moments, right? But I get up here and talk about them because at the end of the day, how would I expect any of you guys to come tell me about the stuff that's going on in your life if I can't first open up and kind of share some vulnerable spots in my life? So what does it look like to be a good friend in this way? Well, first of all, sometimes, you know, being a leader is being the first one to open that door between you and a friend. So as you and a Christian friend, right, maybe the first thing that, hey, I want a friend that'll hold me accountable. Step one is telling them that you need held accountable, right? Letting that friend know, hey, I kind of struggle with this thing. right? There's this thing in my life that I need help with. There's this thing in my life I'm trying to work on. Biblical consistency, prayer consistency, whatever. You know, you guys pray for a lot of this stuff, right? And, you know, Lifeline to a degree is this accountability in some aspects, but not the same way. But, you know, maybe you as a leader, right, if you want to have that, maybe it's just time to open up to your friend and be a little vulnerable, right? And then open up that aspect of your friendship. And then maybe that friend that really wants to share with you a struggle will then feel more comfortable to share their struggles with you because you've opened up to them. I don't know. So that first question, have you been honest about your struggles with a friend? Second one, have you gotten help from a friend for those struggles? I'm going to read these verses. I hate to say that I kind of dislike these verses. I do. I love these verses, but they just are like, I've heard them about 15 million times in the wrong context in terrible sermons at terrible weddings for people that aren't hardly even saved. So I'm going to read these verses, but they're very powerful verses. Don't tune them out, right? Ecclesiastes 4, 9, and 10. Two are better than one because when they have a good reward for their labor. If they fall, one will lift up his fellow, right? That's what I'm talking about, accountability here, right? Ecclesiastes 4, 9, and 10, right? If one falls, the other can help him up, right? This is like if you guys were running a race or you were in the military or something, right? You trip up, you fall, right? You would sure hope that, you know, if the enemy's coming up behind you, you got somebody there helping pull you and your 90-pound rucksack up off the ground, right? Because it happens. You fall. You're never going to not fall. Especially in life, you're never going to not fall. So, but the cool thing is, if you got two people, chances of you both falling at the same time, not as good, right? There's an opportunity where one of you might still be on the straight and narrow, and one of you biffs it, right? So that's the cool thing is where this friendship, right? For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? I have a cousin that was Green Beret medic. So he's the most BA guy I've ever met. I mean, he's just like special forces to the point where he almost died actually. And that's the story is like, I can't remember where they were at, somewhere cold. And like, he almost got to the point where in order to keep him from dying, they had to put him in like a sleeping bag with another dude nonstop. Cause that was the only way they could slowly warm him up. Cause he had like such bad hypothermia. He's cool. He like can't walk on one knee because he jumped out of so many helicopters and like can't hear out of one ear because he shot so much. He's like the coolest guy. And now he's a chiropractor in Wichita. But, you know, it's awesome. I'm like, dude, he's so, no one knows. No one knows how cool he is. He's just the nicest guy. But right, once again, this military context, right? Sometimes, like, you're going to fall short. The quickest way to get up off the ground when you fall short is to have some help, right? You can get yourself up. It's done. It's doable, right? But the quickest way is to have someone help you up. So what I was getting you back to, right? God gave us friends for a reason. The Bible says, we that are strong ought to bear the infirmity of the weak, right? Those of us, when we're firing all spiritual six cylinders, right? The hope would be that when someone is biffing it, we'd be able to help them up. Not beat them down, not feel better than them, right? But help them up. Next verse. Proverbs 27:6. And I'm going to make one of you guys define this verse for me. So pay attention when I read it. Proverbs 27, verse 6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of the enemy are deceitful. Okay. Someone who thinks they're smart. Jordan?
You gotta have a friend that'll tell you when you're doing wrong.
Yeah, exactly, right? Faithful are the wounds of a friend. You can trust, you know, when a friend hurts you, right? That it's what in your best interest, right? You gotta have a friend that can tell you when you're doing wrong. Now, you know, a true friend will tell a friend the truth even when it might not be something you want to say. Might not be the popular thing to say, even when it hurts that person, right? It says, faithful are the wounds of a friend. Sometimes the truth hurts, you know? Maybe my guy friend says, hey, do these pants make me look fat? Like, dude, you are fat. Like, I don't know what to tell you. right? But like, right? Faithful are the wounds of a friend, right? There's nothing worse than like walking around the whole day where you had something in your teeth and you're like, flipping nobody felt like close enough to me to tell me that I look like an idiot with like half a salad in my teeth, right? You know, so faithful are the wounds of a friend. So here's the next question. Have you lovingly told a friend when they were in the wrong Or did you stay silent in fear? Right? Fundamentally, why don't we want to tell a friend when they're in the wrong? And I'm talking about grace and truth here, right? You got to understand the context. I'm not just talking about coming down and like nitpicking and beating your friend up for every little thing, but spiritually speaking, when you see your spirit friends, I see. When you see your friends spiritually biff it and spiritually mess up, right? Are you, right? A lot of times, once again, our friendships are selfish. A lot of our friendships are about what I can get out of it. So if I tell my friend the truth and they don't like the truth, right? If I give them the Bible and they don't like the Bible, then guess what? Then I lose my friend. And so I don't do it because I don't want to lose that friendship or I don't want to lose that relationship. What did you guys have?
I was just going to answer your question. When you asked like why you would stay silent, I was just going to answer your question and you just answered it.
Okay, cool. Very good. Okay, so have you lovingly told a friend when they were in the wrong, or did you stay silent in fear? Now, this is different for saved friends and unsaved friends. Once again, I'm caveating, I told you that most of this is applying to your saved friends, but there is such a thing as, you know, your unsaved friends, right? Can you truly claim that you're someone's friend, a true friend to a person, if you know their eternal destiny is hellfire and damnation, but instead of telling them about it, you're like, I would rather you keep me company at school than you come to heaven with me, right? Like, fundamentally, we realize our friendships are selfish. And so, you know, I think a lot of times when I realize, you know, why I don't tell friends, it's because, well, I would just like to stay comfy instead of, you know, feeling awkward. A true friend looks out for the best interest of their friend, right? Right? Agreed? A true friend looks out for the best interest of their friends, right? You know, there's times where, like, I don't know, maybe you're lifting with your buddy or something. And, you know, he wants to go out and do steroids or something. I don't know. I'm looking at you. Yeah, exactly. Go get roided up. And, you know, all of a sudden he's got heart problems. And you're like, dude, like, I love you. But it's time to, like, chill out. Or maybe you've got, I don't know. I'm thinking of examples off the fly right here on this one. It's just a bad idea because my examples on the fly are never good. But, you know, you get what I'm saying. A true friend looks out for the best interests of their friend. And so, you know, with unsaved people, right? If I'm looking out for the best interest of my unsaved friend, the best interest isn't that I keep our relationship amicable. The best interest of my unsaved friend, if I truly consider them a friend and I'm a good friend to them, is to tell them about their very bleak future, right? And with a saved friend, right? You know, have you ever been around your friends, Christian friends, when they were doing stuff that wasn't very Christianly? I mean, you know, think of examples like, have you been around your friends when they're talking about someone behind their back, when they're gossiping? If you haven't been yet, you will be, right? You know, it's happening, right? Both of those things we know are sins. You know, have you ever been around your friends when they were openly disobeying their parents? Right? That's a common one. Go to the guy's house. I know that his parents don't want him watching this show, but it's like, I can't hear. It's midnight. They're asleep already. We're playing, you know, we're playing video games or something, right? They don't know. Or, you know, this even goes into stuff like, right, doing drugs or, you know, whatever. Take your pick. You know what I mean? But there's a lot of times, and especially in your guys' age, where you'll be around your friends and there'll be, you know, this sin that's going on. Now, once again, going back to our analogy, a true friend looks out for the best interest of his friends. Do you think doing something bad, gossiping, sinning, drugs, I don't know, whatever, take your pick, right? Do you think that, as a friend, you are doing your friend a favor by letting him continue to do that? Right? When it comes to the judgment seat, do you think that that friend is going to come out better or worse based off you keeping your mouth shut and letting the dirty jokes roll on, letting the gossip roll on? Or do you think your friend, when the judgment seat of Christ comes, would go, hey, thanks for shutting that down, you know? Maybe I got 1 cent back at the end of the day instead of nothing. You know what I mean? Once again, a true friend looks out for the best interest of their friend. Think about the eternity of it, right? Don't think about it right now. Think about the eternity of it. You know, look out for the best interest of your friend. Little note, you know, little step by little step is how someone falls away from God, right? And so maybe you could be a part of the thing that stops your friend from backsliding, and it just as a whole, right? We've all seen people leave the church. We've all seen people get bad attitudes. We've all seen that happen, right? Maybe they just needed a friend to try to bring them back in line. I don't know. So that first question was, have you lovingly told a friend when they were in the wrong, or did you stay silent in fear? And the next question was, have you been approachable and open to being corrected yourself? oftentimes I think we get really defensive, right? Someone tells us we did something stupid. Even if we know it was stupid, we hate being told that it was stupid, right? You know, how many times does your mom tell you that you did something dumb and you're like, in your head, you're just like, yeah, that was dumb. But you're just like, shut up. Like, I don't want to hear it. You know? You know, part of the reason I think it's so hard to correct each other is because we stink at taking criticism, right? So we just assume that the other people will have that issue as well. You know, I think when it came to giving lessons, I would constantly ask people, like, so I'd get up and give a sermon, right? At youth group or at church or something, and I would ask most people, and they would say, oh, whatever the Lord, you know, I'd say, hey, you know, how was that sermon? Do you have any thoughts on it? What can you tell me about it? And they'd say, oh, praise the Lord, brother, that was good, you know, just whatever the Lord gave you, that's great, you know, and so I was like, okay, cool, whatever. But if you go ask someone like Chris Schmidt, right, he'll say, well, you said 57 times, and you know, you didn't tie your points together, and you misquoted this verse, and right now it's not comfortable, but guess which one made me a better preacher? The second one. Chris Schmidt is half the reason I can preach these days. Because, I mean, fundamentally, he was the guy that I could go to every sermon, every lesson, and he would say, yeah, that was fine. Here's something you can try to grow, right? And so, as friends, once again, what's a true friend? Someone that looks out for your best interest. You know, it's kind of the emperor's new clothes situation. Proverbs 27, 9 and 10. I'm going to speed up a hair here. Proverbs 27, 9 and 10 says this. Ointment and perfume rejoice the heart. So doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not, neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity, for better is a neighbor that is near than a brother that is far off. Okay, like listen to that. Better is a neighbor that is near than a brother that is far off. Okay, so the next thing about a good friend, right? A good friend is present, right? Better is a neighbor that is near than a brother that is far off. Right, you know, especially back in the day, right? You know, if you had a brother that lived two cities over, that's like 3 days walk. You think they're going to help you if you like got a flat tire and on your way to the mosque or, you know, like no, they're not going to help you out, right? But the neighbor that's near is better than the brother that's far off. Who's heard the phrase "blood is thicker than water"? What do you think it means? I'm convinced you'll probably be wrong, but what do you think it means? Anybody that's brave?
Dang. I'm not going to give you the right answer.
Come on, someone give me. Oh, you know the right answer. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah, what does it mean? What's the way people use it, right?
Family is closer than...
People use it as family's blood is closer than water. But the whole phrase is blood is thicker than the water of the womb, right? So what it's saying is the people you've shed blood with, right? The brothers you've gone into battle with, you shed blood, sweat, and tears with these people. It says those people are the people that you're closer than just the people that your relationship is only just pure, through pure fact that you were born of the same mom, right? And so, you know, there's the verse that talks about that, right? There is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. True friendship can sometimes be, you know, closer than familial. All of us that have had to leave our families to be a part of Old Path understand that, right? That God just gave us a new family down here, and you know, it's pretty amazing. So, have you gone out of your way to be a friend to those that the Lord has put in your life? Right? Better is a neighbor that is near than a brother that is far off. Right? Have you been present for the friends when they needed you in calamity? Were you actively there for your friends, or did you have to be asked to participate or asked to help them out? You know, I find oftentimes when I have a friend that's struggling, there's either two reactions, and these are both my common reactions. Either it's to downgrade what they're going through, right? Like, oh, it's not that bad. Like, dude, your cat just died. Like, get over it. You're fine, right?
Hey. I feel personally attacked.
Hey, I'm not, right? Okay, right, so, you know, oftentimes it's like, oh, you got to be on a test. I'm so sorry for you. Like, right, the first response is to just downgrade what someone, like someone's pain that they're going through. Or the second response is often to just say, like, There you go. That's your problem. You know, I'm like, I don't want to get weird and try to like help you out. I don't want to get weird and talk to you about your issues. I don't want to get weird and talk to you about your struggles, right? But Proverbs 17:17 says, "A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." Right? A friend's going to stick through on those rough times. You know, have you been patient with a friend when they were going through struggles? Or did you just get frustrated? Right? Sometimes we have a friend that they're stupid. We have a friend that they're doing dumb stuff. We have a friend that, I don't know, take your pick. Are we long-suffering with them in the sense that, you know, we give them that grace, that we give them our attention, that we're there for them probably longer than they deserve, right? We've all been that idiot sometimes where we just were, you know, stupid. And sometimes you just need your buddy to cut you a little slack. You know, there's been times in marriage where, like, you know, when I got concussed, like, you know, like one day I pretty much, like, which it messed with my head, I'm going to say. But, you know, one day I ended up on the, kitchen floor just crying because, I don't know why, it just happened when you get hit in the head really hard with a ball. So, you know, right? And then so for a couple days I was just kind of a weirdo, right? And Kenzie just kind of had to deal with me, you know. But hey, you know, she was there, I appreciate it. Right? It was an experience. That was fun, right? But she could have easily just been like, "Come on, you baby, like, you're fine." Or she could have, you know, there's a lot of things she could have done, but she was present, right? She's a good friend in that situation. Proverbs 27:9-10. "Ointment and perfume rejoice the heart, but so doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel." I forgot about this. A friend is someone we can go to for advice, right? Have you sought wise counsel from a friend? Or have you relied on yourself out of pride or fear of what they might say? A lot of times, and this is me all the time, right? I don't go to other people for opinions because I just, like, am scared their opinion would be different than mine. And so I just don't ask, right? So, we can't disagree on this thing that I want your opinion on if I don't ask your opinion. So, very nice. Very nice, right? Lastly here, or two more, real fast. Proverbs 27:17. We'll flip to this one. This is the classic, right? We're on this page. "Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend." Right, once again, you've heard this verse a million times. What's it mean, right? Iron sharpeneth iron, right? You're made of the same stuff, right? Can a knife sharpen itself, right? Like, if I want my knife to get sharper, like, what I have to, like, rub it against something else, right? Like, it can't make itself sharp. And there are aspects of your own spiritual life where you're just going to be blind to. There's going to be aspects of your life where you don't see it, right? Because you're living it, right? You've got your own flesh in the way. You're kind of an idiot. Sometimes a friend is what it takes to sharpen you, right? A spiritual friend sometimes is helpful. And then lastly, James 4:4. I'll just read this one for you guys. "Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God." Here's kind of what I was thinking about when I was listening to this, right? There's a lot of times I act like the world. There's a lot of times I'm an example of the world. There's a lot of times functionally I behave like the world. So if someone is my friend, that makes them a friend of the world. And what does that verse say? Someone a friend of the world is what?
Enmity with God.
Enmity with God, right? So the influence I have on my friends, if I'm living like the world and I'm influencing my friends, what am I doing? I'm pulling them away from God. Do you realize you have the power to do that? That you have the power in your relationship to push people closer to God or pull people further away from God? There are people in this church that annoy the heck out of me. You know, there's some weird, smelly, crusty guys downstairs that, like, you know, don't quite know when to stop talking sometimes, and sometimes it gets on your nerves and whatever. But you know what? I realized at one point in time, some of those old crusty dudes, every time you talk to them, what do they bring up? They bring up God. every single conversation I've had with that guy or every single conversation I've had with that person, they're bringing up Jesus Christ. They're bringing up church. They're, hey, what are you reading right now in the Bible? You know, how's your prayer life? You know, what's that stuff? That person is influencing me for God in that situation. Whereas, think about what I do. When I go to a friend, what do I always talk about? I always talk about, you know, the video games. And, you know, we were talking about TV shows earlier, right? Or we're talking about, I don't know, take your hobby that you share with that friend, right? How much of what you talk about with your friends is talking about the world? And how much of what you talk about with your friends is talking about God, right? Are you drawing them towards God? Or are you drawing them towards the world, i.e. making them at enmity with God? Something to kind of think about. You know, I joked about that speeding analogy from that sermon I did a while ago, right? That, you know, sometimes it pisses people off, right? They'll get caught behind me on a one-lane road and I'm going the speed limit and they hate my guts until we pass a cop, right? And then all of a sudden they've been now going the speed limit and so they're safe. Whereas if they were on their own, they wouldn't have been, right? You can have that impact on people around you in life. You know, so when it comes to a situation where your friends, you know, like I talked about earlier, you're laughing and making bad jokes, or you're doing something stupid, or, you know, taking part in gossip, or, you know, even just wasting a lot of your conversation on things that don't have any spiritual benefit, right? Once again, just evaluate your friendship. What do you talk about mostly with your friends? So I have this little quiz here. I turned it around because I was scared someone would be reading the entire time.
You're doing great. Nothing fell.
I needed a friend.
But, one marker.
Okay. Well. Hey, you know, we'll take it. That's 33% or 66%. That's better than I did in college. So. Alrighty. So. These were all the questions I was asking you guys today. And so I kind of just in my brain was like, right, if I were to look at all these aspects of what a good spiritual friend is, what would my grade be? So right there, have you been honest about your struggles with a friend? You know, contrasting, right, with, you know, just keeping them to myself. Have you gotten help from a friend on those struggles? Right, once again, God didn't make us to be alone. He made us and he made friendship so that we could help each other grow. It's a tool in the tool belt of the Christian. If you want to get sharp, you got to have a friend to help you sometimes. Have you lovingly told a friend they were in the wrong, or did you stay silent because you were in fear? And really that fear is just driven by selfishness, right? Have you been approachable and open to being corrected? Have you sought wise counsel from a friend or relied on yourself, didn't want their answer? Have you gone out of your way to be there for your friends, be present? Have you been patient with a struggling friend, or did you get frustrated? Have you helped a friend to better themselves? And are you an influence of God or of the world to your friends? So I don't know. If you were to just look at that and tally that up, I mean, are any of us passing in most of our friendships? I don't think I am. You know, maybe with Kenzie, but like out of all my other friendships I've ever had in life, like, I don't know, man. Like, pretty rough stuff. Pretty rough stuff. I went way too far. Now we have to go all the way back here. So now, here is where I want to bring it back around to prayer. I know you're like, how the heck is he going to do this? I'm bringing it back around to prayer. Exodus 33:11. And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face as a man speaketh unto his friend. Hey, there we go. Brought it back around. Pew, pew. Very excited. Look at that. That's so cool. Do you think of God as your friend? You ever thought about that? A lot of us think of him as this giant, distant cloud in the sky. You know, some white dude with long hair. You know, I don't know. Do you think of him as your friend ever? Let's imagine there's a cool kid at school, right? Okay, so they're in, okay, imagine with me, just visualize. Okay, there's a cool kid at school, right? They are, and by cool kid, I don't mean like cool kid, I mean like a kid that you think is cool. Because sometimes the cool kids aren't cool. You know what I mean? There's a balance there, but a kid that you think are cool, right? You think this kid's cool, they're super nice, right? Super friendly, you know, they like smile at you in the hallway, like say hey, you know, never try to punch you or anything, you know, it's great. Okay, you're like accidentally neighbors. Like you see that they're like just like on the other side of the cul-de-sac from you, right? You realize that you're sneaking by one day, you see in their window that, oh, they have all the same action figures and movies that I've got. We are totally into the same hobbies. I want to be friends with this kid, right? This kid is awesome. I want to be friends with this kid, right? So you see him in school and you say, hey man, can I borrow your pencil? He goes, yeah, sure. Here's the pencil. Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. You're so good, right? And then you're with him in the next period and you go, hey man, oh, my friend's in the same math class as you. Can they copy your notes for the test on Tuesday? Sure, I guess. Yeah, like, sure. Here's my notes. Have your friend copy my notes. Oh, thank you. You know, hey man, I forgot my deodorant at home. You know, it's the end of gym class, and like, you know, right, hey, can I borrow? And the friend's just like,
gotta be spray.
Pick off the hairs, and you know, just right. Okay. Oh, thank you, brother. Thank you. No. So you're talking to him later, and you're just, you know, so we're pretty good friends, aren't we? And the guy goes, dude, I don't even know you. Right?
Yep.
Yeah? You see where I'm going here, right? But we have all the same hobbies. We do? Well, yeah, and you know, and we're neighbors. Like, are you stalking me? Right? Like, right? Supplication, intercession, even thanksgiving, those are not enough to make a relationship. I can ask for that pencil, I can ask for my friend to get the math homework, I can say thank you all I want, but at the end of the day, does the guy even know me? No. That is the fourth type of prayer, and it's aptly named prayer, because we're good at that, you know? So, right? Supplication, intercession, thanksgiving are not enough to be a friend with God. If you want that relationship with him, if you want to be his friend, right? Sometimes that means you're just going to have to talk to him instead of asking him for things. Novel concept, I know, right? Right? Now, why did I take all this time to go through what it's like to be a good friend? Because I wanted you guys to realize that I want you to pray to the Lord for that friendship. Right? But I want that to be motivated, not out of this is the fourth kind of prayer, so I need to pray and talk to the Lord sometimes. I want it to be motivated, and what it should be motivated out of is the Lord wants a relationship with me, I want a relationship with him, so because I want to be a good friend to the Lord, I'm going to talk to him. I mean, if you realize, first of all, of the ones that apply to God, right? Obviously God doesn't have struggles, God doesn't need help, but does he lovingly tell me when we're in the wrong? Yeah. Has he gone out of my way to be there for me? Yes. Has he been patient with me? Yeah. Has he helped me better myself? Yes. Is he an influence of God in my life? Well, yeah. Right? God is the perfect friend. So if I want to have a friendship with God, who is the limiting factor? This guy. Right? This guy. So, going back, if God's my friend, do I ever talk to him about the struggles that I have? Ask yourself, how often do you say, Lord, I'm struggling. And obviously we go to him a lot of times with our big sins, right? But even just tiny stuff, like, Lord, I'm so sassy when I drive. I get so wound up. Like, that's so dumb. Do I ask for help from him? Right? When he corrects me, am I approachable? Or does he have to bop me upside the head, right? When someone gets up on Sunday, when Bob gets up and says something that pricks you in the heart just a little bit, or when I get up, with Lord willing, and you see something pricks you in the heart a little bit, or you hear something in Lifeline, or you hear something somewhere else, right? Pricks you in the heart a little bit, do you quench that fire? Or are you open to it? Have I sought counsel from him, right? Bible talks about what's the counsel of the Lord? That book, right? You sought counsel from it? You got something going on? You paying attention to that book? Yeah. Right? Am I a good friend with God? A lot of times? Well, I don't know. You know, that's kind of up to you to talk about and think about. But, you know, this is kind of one of the last things I wanted to kind of talk about. You know, when, once again, I feel like these stories always end up with me being crazy in one way or another. But, right, when Kenzie got pregnant, I swear to God, you guys don't realize it. Like, pheromones are a thing. And, like, hormones and stuff. So whenever she got pregnant, my brain went batty. I don't know what it was. I think maybe it was just like stressed because I was having a kid. And so for a while there, I was really anxious. Just like kind of had some health problems going on and just was like, I was just really anxious all the time. And so, you know, I finally found out that, you know, I could call my parents and like talking to someone would often get me to stop being anxious, right? I'd be getting wound up. And so like, so I'd call my mom and just like talk about the day. And then by the end of talking to my mom, it would, you know, I'd feel better. Or, you know, talk to my wife or call friends from high school, you know, and just say, hey, how you doing? You know, talk to them and it fixed my anxiety. And then, of course, that works great until it's 3 a.m. and you're like, well, my pregnant wife is asleep. And, you know, let's be real. I don't have the kind of friends that I can call at 3 a.m. Like, they, like, dude, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Yeah. Right? So here's what the Lord showed me. Once again, this is a situation where sometimes the Lord will let you be a little bit uncomfortable to teach you something. Right? 3 a.m, I was like, you know what? There's no reason I can't just talk to God like I'm talking to my mom on the phone, right? And I learned a lot in that period of life, and honestly, sometimes I still miss it because I'm not anxious right now. I'm not wound up. But I was so close to the Lord in that season of life where just walking through my day, I was start to get anxious, and so I just start talking to the Lord about my day. I'm like, hey, you know, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, I'm glad. Thanks for that relationship with so-and-so. Just talking to him, not asking him for anything, but just chit-chatting, right? Building that relationship. And so, you know, that's something I wish I could just give all of you guys that experience to witness what it's like to just talk to the Lord as if he was your friend, right? But out of a motivation to develop that friendship, not out of an obligation to just phone in your spiritual prayers for the day. So that's all I have.